Welcome, history nerds and film buffs, to Real Echoes, a show where we take you on a journey through time with cinema as we review the hidden history behind some of Hollywood's most iconic films, as well as the process behind some of your favorite scenes on the silver screen. I'm your host, Devin Irizarry. All right, so here we are, episode one, and I've been thinking to myself, what would be a good movie to cover for our first episode here? I wanted to go with something lighthearted, something, you know, to elevate the spirits, get you guys engaged, but then I hopped onto HBO Max and saw that The Revenant was on there, and I thought, well, if nothing else, it'll give me an excuse to watch Leonardo DiCaprio get eaten by that bear again, which, I don't know why, still makes me laugh every single time. So on today's episode, we'll be covering one of my all-time favorite films, The Revenant. I'm going to be giving you guys a brief synopsis, a little summary of the plot as a whole. In addition to that, I'm going to be giving you just an in-depth look at some of the historical facts and knowledge and events that might have been omitted or falsified or anything, etc., etc., as well as some of my overall opinions behind the movie and my final rating as to the accuracy and production value and whether I think it is a good enough movie to nerd out on. So without further ado, let's get into it, guys. The Revenant is a historical action slash drama film that centers around the life of Hugh Glass and the events that almost took him out, i.e. getting mauled by a bear, which is what Leonardo DiCaprio finally won his first Oscar for. To my knowledge, he has not won anything else, but, you know, who knows, maybe there will be more bear mauling in his future. Leonardo DiCaprio plays Hugh Glass, who, along with his Pawnee son and his entire hunting exhibition party, whatever you want to call it, get stranded in the woods after a group of Arikara natives. I really, really, really hope I'm pronouncing that right. They call them Re-Indians or Re-Natives in the film. But after a group of Re-Indians attack their entire party, leaving them stranded, wandering through the woods, they attempt to escape by boat after being initially attacked, and only a handful of survivors escape, with them Glass, his son, and two travelers by the name of Fitzgerald and Bridger. Oh my goodness, I lost my note real quick there, and I forgot what his name was. Bridger, yes. Now, as Glass, along with a dwindling number of survivors of the party, escape by boat, we transition back to the camp that is all raised with flames and bodies littered around, and the Arikara Indians and natives checking the bodies and checking different areas of the camp, apparently looking for someone by the name of Powaka. Oh my gosh, I am definitely butchering these names, and I really, really am embarrassed to say them, but now thinking about it in hindsight, might not have been the best idea to pick a film that has, well, names that I would find difficult to pronounce. You know, let's be fair, I did do that to myself, but continuing on, we transition back to Glass and the party hiking through the mountains on foot, when suddenly Glass goes off by himself while the rest of the party and his son sleep. Upon him entering a small little patch of open land, a little section between some trees, we are given the scene that, you know, everybody knows about. It's at this point that Glass looks down and sees a couple of bear cubs before him, just, you know, running through the woods, not a care in the world. Honestly, I looked at that, I thought it was kind of adorable. Knowing what happened afterwards, well, I mean, not so adorable. It's at this point that we finally get the scene, you know, the scene. Glass then looks up and encounters a ginormous grizzly bear that instantly charges him and tramples him, attacks him, bites him, just tears him up, just really messes him up and gives him a run for his money. Now, knowing that he did in fact survive the attack, and on top of that, knowing that it is a fictionalized bear and is Leonardo DiCaprio getting, you know, trampled and thrown around and tossed around by it, I can't help but kind of giggle a little bit. I mean, not necessarily because it's him getting attacked by a bear, but just knowing that it's a CGI bear and he was probably just, you know, tossing and turning while some sort of green screen figure you know, just batted him around a little bit. I don't know how exactly they did it. I just find it to be funny to think about. Now, completely injured and battered, Glass crawls diligently and as quietly as possible to not disturb the bear that has just, you know, walked away for a bit thinking that he was dead. He grabs his rifle, prepares a shot, and of course the bear starts treading back towards him, and in the most Hollywood thing ever, he shoots the bear right in the face, and for whatever reason, the bear just does not go out. I have not hunted bears personally. I don't prefer to. I would not want to. But I don't know. I don't know if a bear's face is that resilient. Whatever it was, 1823, we'll move past that. Either way, the bear continues to attack him and just claw even further at him and hurt him even worse. The only portion in the entire scene that genuinely just, you know, gives me a bit of, you know, the heebie-jeebies, you know, not easy for me to watch, is a portion in which the bear swipes at Glass's neck and you can see his neck get slashed. There's not a real, you know, clean or not gross way for me to put it, but albeit very gross scene, very hard for me to watch, very well choreographed though, very, very well executed, honestly looked incredibly realistic, and I give all credit to the filmmakers for that. Now we're reaching the 12th round of this Leo versus grizzly bear battle to the death, and I gotta say, it is not looking good for Leo in this very scenario. I keep saying Leo, but I really should be saying his character's name, Hugh Glass. It's not looking good for Hugh Glass at this point. Now, in a last-ditch effort, he's able to grab his blade, and upon the bear jumping on top of him one more time, he sticks it a couple of times in the neck. Ultimately, he rolls down a hill where the bear rolls down on top of him and crushes his body. And to have the dead bear roll over top of him and, you know, crush him down that way, I feel was just a bit of a hat in the hat. I don't know if that's the actual way that he was found, but I would just really hope that it wasn't. Continuing on, after hearing the ruckus and after hearing the gunshot blaring through the woods, the rest of his party comes to check up on him. After eventually getting the bear off him, as they nurse him back to health, Fitzgerald is giving the rest of the party the typical, well, it would be wrong to let him continue suffering this way. We might as well just make it quick. It's going to be torturous if we continue onwards. Fitzgerald, played by Tom Hardy, which his performance also incredible, but I gotta say, is just, I mean, it's a little on the nose when you literally just discover your party member being seriously injured and your first reaction is, well, we might as well just, you know, take him out, put him out of his misery. I mean, like, you don't even want to try. It seems a little on the nose. The party ultimately decides to build a makeshift stretcher out of logs and whatever materials they could find to carry Glass's broken up body back all the way through the wilderness, eventually up to the Yellowstone to see if they could find some help, which is a treacherous journey of hundreds and hundreds of miles, which they do not make. They proceed to carry Hugh Glass's body through miles and miles of treacherous terrain, all while still being tracked and still being hunted by the Re-Indians or Arikara natives. I still don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Again, really crossing my fingers, hoping that I am. I probably should just look it up at this point. Ultimately, the entire time they're carrying him, Fitzgerald is very combative, saying that it overall just is not gonna do them any favors, and they'll likely all be slowed down and likely all freeze to death or get hunted down if they don't get rid of some, for lack of a better term, dead weight. Thus, the party captain decides to leave at least two people along with Glass and his son to see him through, and if worse comes to worse, eventually give him a proper burial before joining up with the rest of the party. One person who decides to stay back with them is a young kid, 19 years old, by the name of Bridger. Played by Will Poulter, Bridger is only a 19-year-old kid who joins up with this party for unknown reasons, but ultimately does decide to stay back with Hugh Glass and his son because he feels some sort of I don't know, sense of responsibility for him. He does truly feel bad for what has happened to him and what is going on with him and his son, and he truly does want to help. The other person that decides to stay back, of course, Fitzgerald. As the rest of the party continues on, Hawk, Fitzgerald, and Bridger decide to stay back to tend to Hugh Glass and try to make his passing as comfortable as possible, or in Hawk's case, ultimately try to help him out to see if he'll recover. Now, in the process, Fitzgerald does get mighty impatient the entire time. Honestly, one of the grimmest scenes in the entire film, at least to me, comes shortly after this, and it's one of many grim scenes in the film. I won't give away all of them, but it's when Fitzgerald comes over to Glass's body, and while Glass can barely look around, barely acknowledge he's there, and is still dazed, and can't even really speak, is simply mumbling, goes over to him and gives them this whole spiel of, hey, I can make it quick, you know, I won't tell anybody that you gave up, it's fine, I'll do that for you, all you have to do is blink, which kind of chills me a little bit to the core because, you know, Glass does not try to blink for about 15 to 20 seconds. I counted. It felt like an eternity in which he tried to keep his eyes open, but ultimately blinks. The second he blinks, Fitzgerald places a cloth over his mouth and his nose and tries to suffocate him and kill him while praying over top of his body. Ultimately, he's stopped by Hawk, who comes over and hits him over the head with a gun. In the process, Fitzgerald gets angered, Russell hits him to the ground, and ends up stabbing Hawk in the stomach and killing him, and throwing him in a shallow grave. This event becomes the catalyst for the entire revenge arc of this story. It's because of this, and because of Fitzgerald's betrayal, and the fact that he then proceeds to lie to Bridger about where Hawk's body is and what's happening to Hugh Glass and how bad his condition is, that Hugh Glass ultimately is able to regain some amounts of strength and crawl his way into the wilderness to try and track Fitzgerald and Bridger down. Now, after having his son murdered in front of him and being left to die by the people who you were supposed to be working with, the only people that you could trust in that entire environment, and now needing to crawl almost lifelessly through the wilderness to survive and track them down, you would think that not a whole lot of things could get worse for this guy. Of course, until more Arakara natives show up and try to hunt him down further. This forces Glass to eventually escape through a river in which he almost does drown. Because, man, he cannot get a break. I get it. Leo, you wanted that Oscar, and good for you. But, my God, it's like, it's just too much at that point. You're doing a lot. In the process, Fitzgerald and Bridger eventually escape, and eventually, in a bit of a scuffle, Bridger finds out that Fitzgerald had potentially been lying about where Hawk might have gone. He had told him originally that he had not seen him and had probably gotten picked up by natives, or probably had gotten killed, or whatever, or lost. Who knows? Well, finally, Bridger, while naive and young, is not necessarily a fool either, and kind of understands that Fitzgerald is not the most trustworthy person on the planet. Ultimately, he does still believe him, though, when Fitzgerald wakes him up in the middle of the morning and tells him, hey, there is a party of re-natives that are coming for us. We gotta leave Glass right now, and we don't have time to search for Hawk. This is the lie that he ultimately tells him, that he uses to try to cover up the fact that he murdered Glass's son and left him to die. Bridger, for the remainder of the film, slowly pieces together the reality that Fitzgerald was probably lying to him and that he potentially might have left Hugh Glass and his son to die out there simply because of his naivete or just not necessarily knowing better, just wanting to survive. By this point, Hugh Glass eventually washes up on a riverbank and climbs up a small hill in which he encounters a herd of bison and eventually later on in the night meets a Pawnee hunter. Now this Pawnee native hunter begins to tear into a bison carcass and eat it raw, which again is another one of those scenes that is just difficult for me to watch because ew. Like, again, I don't get squeamish often, but there's just something about some dude digging into some random animal's innards and just taking chunks out. It's gross. It's not a nice thing to watch. But Hugh Glass weakly crawls over to the man and to the bison, at which point he begs him for help, begs him for food, begs him for anything with the little strength he has and the little words he can muster out through his torn up throat, through all of his wounds. The Pawnee man then gives him just, I don't even know what it actually was. I believe it was a liver. He takes out a liver from the bison and just throws it at him, just throws it on the ground, at which point Hugh Glass crawls over to it and just starts taking chunks out of it and starts eating it raw as well, which weirdly enough served as this sort of bonding moment for them too. Which, honestly, I don't know if that is some sort of sign of respect, some sort of ultimate sign of, I don't know, brotherhood, friendliness, companionship. I'm not exactly sure, but overall, I believe the scene was shot very, very beautifully. It was very gritty, just very dark, and ultimately very natural, and I did enjoy that scene immensely. Fitzgerald and Bridger by this point ultimately make it to a fort out near Yellowstone and receive payment for staying behind and giving Glass a proper burial. Don't let the lack of a visual take away from my air quotes. Bridger does not accept the payment because he knows it's blood money, it's dirty money. He doesn't want any part of it. Fitzgerald, of course, takes the money, no questions asked. We transition back to Hugh Glass and the Pawnee hunter, at which point they're conversing, and he ultimately tells him, "You will die if you don't get those wounds tended to." So, he proceeds to tend to his wounds. He picks him up, puts him on his horse, and they ride onwards and eventually make camp. And what I do like to highlight about certain movies is some of the relationships the characters have. I love the relationship between Leonardo DiCaprio's character Hugh Glass and this Pawnee hunter. They overall just have, for what two grizzly mountain men could have, they ultimately have a very good friendship. They trust each other. They really do actually, in a sense, care about each other, you feel, at certain points. At one point, they are sitting by a tree and catching snowflakes on their tongue as they laugh at each other, which I do like when, which I really do feel just added just a whole new highlight to the actual relationship between these two characters. It just added just that friendship factor that we haven't seen so far in this film at all. Of course, friendship and happiness in this film cannot last forever, as while the hunter is tending to Hugh Glass's wounds, Hugh Glass eventually passes out. He wakes up and he's in a shelter with his wounds healing up nicely. He looks around for the Pawnee hunter to try and find him, to try and, you know, plan out their next move. Eventually, he walks down a path to find another one of the grimmest sights in the entire film. The Pawnee man simply is hanging from a tree. At this point, Hugh Glass is once again alone, and he has lost basically the only ally he has had this entire time. Glass presses onwards by himself and eventually runs into a group of French traders. With the French traders is a kidnapped Arikara girl who they proceed to take turns assaulting. One of the men who attempts to assault her is then stopped when Glass comes up from behind, pulls his pistol, and puts it to his head. The girl proceeds to take the blade and hold to Glass as he tries to prep a horse. I won't spoil what happened, but the man, I mean, he did not end up well, and Glass has to ride away by himself on horseback. He eventually escapes, only to then be attacked by more Arikara natives who believe he is a threat, who then chase him off of a cliff. So he proceeds to lose his horse and loses his ally, and again is basically just left alone by himself with not a whole lot of options in the woods. In a last minute, last ditch attempt to seek any kind of shelter or camouflage from the natives, or, you know, just shelter from the environment, he opens up his dead horse. And again, another one that's just not pleasant. Takes out its entrails and proceeds to sleep inside of the horse's body. Again, this is not a clean movie, but a good one nonetheless. After this whole ordeal, amazingly, Glass still survives, and he manages to hike his way back to civilization, at which point he is finally able to confront Bridger. Now, Bridger is nearly executed for leaving him behind, but is ultimately spared simply because he is a kid, and ultimately, it wasn't his fault. Everybody knew who the real culprit behind Hugh Glass's abandoning and his state and him almost dying was. It was Fitzgerald, who, unfortunately for Hugh Glass, had already left the fort that Bridger and him had been staying at. Glass proceeds to track Fitzpatrick through the mountains and eventually confronts him at a lake, at which point they are standing face to face and engage in one of my all-time favorite movie scenes of all time. It is a one-on-one Leonardo DiCaprio versus Tom Hardy, grizzly mountain dude with a beard versus grizzlier gross mountain dude with a beard. Knife fight to the death, and it is not a pretty sight, but my God, was it a well choreographed fight scene. It is still one of my favorite to have ever hit the silver screen, and ultimately, I feel like it deserved rewards on its own. The skill and the acting level and the overall components that go into choreographing a fight scene that looks that realistic, that gory, and that intense, I mean, it's a talent. It's an art. This dramatic one-on-one battle ends with Glass getting the best of Fitzgerald, and Fitzgerald reminding him that whether he takes his revenge or not, his son is dead. It won't bring his son back. So, at this very moment, in, I would argue, very cinematic fashion, a group of Arikara natives who were following Hugh Glass, out of nowhere, ride up through the river. Now, it almost seems as though they were observing them fight, and, I mean, I don't know, I guess they didn't want to lend a hand, but damn, I mean, it would have been nice if they at least lended a single hand. I mean, it wouldn't have taken all that much. They're old and grizzly and pretty messed up from the mountains. I feel like any kind of intervention could have turned the tides in that battle. But whatever. Glass hits Fitzgerald with one last saying, you know, one last truth bomb, and essentially says, "Revenge is in the Creator's hands, not mine." A statement that he had heard from the Pawnee hunter who had rescued his life earlier. So, because revenge is not in his hands, he grabs Fitzgerald and throws him into the river, in which he flows down and is eventually grabbed off screen by the re-natives. And, I mean, one can infer what happened to him simply because of the sounds, you know, the squelching noises and the screams, but I'm gonna guess it wasn't the nicest thing ever. At this point, the re-natives cross the river and ride by Glass, ultimately deciding to spare him. When he looks up, on top of one of those horses is the young girl that he had saved from being assaulted. So, I guess good actions do have good consequences sometimes in movies. It's poetic at that point. This ultimately leads to the conclusion of one of, I think, the best films created within the last 10 years. It is an absolute cinematic masterpiece. That being said, it does also have the big old branding that says based on a true story. So, I want to get into the nitty-gritty. Is it actually based on a true story? Well, let's get into that. The answer as to whether or not the story of the Revenant was actually truly based on a true story is, yeah, kind of, more or less, some of it. Despite the movie being such a beautiful rendition of a truly harrowing historical event, a lot of the stuff had been falsified and a lot of it not exactly told as it actually happened. You can argue with me if you want, but I would say that some of the real life events, honestly, were just the slightest bit more badass than what Leonardo DiCaprio depicted. So I will hit you immediately with the biggest glass of cold water from this whole film. Hawk, Hugh Glass's half-Pawnee son, never actually existed. In fact, Hugh Glass didn't actually have a son. I know it was depressing for me to learn also. In fact, Hugh Glass decided to go after Fitzgerald and Bridger for revenge simply because he was just, I guess, pissed off that he got left behind to die, which, I mean, I would be too, but still, vengeance for your dead son, I mean, that's how you make a movie right there. That's an intense story. Unfortunately, Hugh Glass didn't actually have a son. This kid did not exist, or I guess fortunately, because if he did exist and he did get killed off in the same way as the movie, I mean, that's rough. So I guess I'm glad that he didn't have a son to lose, but also, still, a little bit of a surprise for the movie as a whole. This also ultimately means that the scene in which Fitzgerald tries to suffocate Hugh Glass as he prays over him, that also didn't happen. That was done completely for dramatic effect, and quite frankly, it was done very well. I felt it in my bones as I was watching. I felt like I couldn't breathe watching it. It was intense. Now, that being said, the pivotal scene that everybody knows that was 100% real was that bear attack scene. Hugh Glass was actually attacked by a massive grizzly bear, and not only that, he was also attacked by the grizzly bear's cubs. They decided to join in, which I'm glad they didn't include that in the movie, because that would have just felt like way too much for one person to survive. It would have been just over the top, which I guess the real life events were insanely over the top, but you know, that's neither here nor there. Amazingly though, after this, a handful of the events that occur in the film actually did happen fairly accurately. Hugh Glass, with only one functioning arm and one functioning leg, crawled hundreds of miles through the forest to try to track down his old, you know, his old hunting party. Now, unfortunately, there is no record of a Pawnee hunter coming and helping him exactly. There are stories told as to that, but there's no necessarily accurate way to say that this man existed. That said, on his journey, he was assisted by a handful of different Pawnee natives and different people that he would come to find along his journey. Various, very, very few people, but tribes and groups that helped him nonetheless. Now, I want to highlight another one of the most stomach-churning scenes in the film, and that's when Leonardo DiCaprio uses maggots on his back to heal and fight the infection on the wounds. Did Hugh Glass actually do this? The answer is a resounding yes, and it is just as gross as one would imagine it. He placed maggots from dead animals and from rotting wood bark on his back to eat the infection, in a sense. I don't know the proper medical way of saying it, but he used that as a treatment. And I am getting queasy just kind of thinking about it and just kind of speaking about it. Now, to go along with the dead animal disgusting theme, fortunately enough, I guess for Hugh Glass, the scene in which he hollows out his dead horse and sleeps inside of it, that frankly did not happen. There are no records suggesting that that actually occurred. So thank goodness for that, but still an interesting decision to keep it in by the filmmakers. All that said, I believe it was a good decision. I think it definitely adds to that sort of survival aspect, but On top of that, there is still one ginormous asterisk that the movie does in fact falsify heavily. In the most heartbreaking twist of the entire film and of all of my research, Hugh Glass doesn't ever actually end up getting this one-on-one fight to the death revenge with Fitzgerald. In fact, the true story is a lot less climactic and ultimately a lot sadder in the end. Hugh Glass, with the help of various tribe members and various French traders that he would eventually find and ask for aid and ask for help, would heal and eventually track down Bridger and Fitzgerald the same way as he did in the movie. He eventually tracked Fitzgerald to Fort Henry, but was only greeted by Bridger. Now, upon meeting Bridger, that is true, he was only 19 years old, and he was a naive, you know, accomplice in this whole ordeal. As a result, Glass and the parties with him ultimately decided to spare him. I am sure much to Bridger's appreciation. The real-life Bridger informed Hugh Glass as to where he could find Fitzgerald, and so he continued to track him down. And track him down he did for hundreds and hundreds of more miles to Fort Atkinson. At which point, we are presented with the saddest news in this entire real life story. Ready to finally take his revenge and finally ready to kill Fitzgerald, Hugh Glass is interrupted and informed that Fitzgerald has by this point actually joined the army. He has joined with Uncle Sam, therefore by making him government property. At which point, Hugh Glass would not have been able to he would not have been permitted to kill him in any sort of capacity whatsoever. Not that killing was necessarily moral or allowed to begin with, but once they saw that he was going after a U.S. Army soldier, it was basically game over at that point. No go, no bueno. At that point, he would have been considered a criminal and hung for his crimes at that point. So that, in a sense, was the biggest asterisk with this film, which I gotta say was pretty heavily disappointing to me as a history nerd. I would have loved to have believed that these two dudes actually duked it out one-on-one and actually fought to the death and Hugh Glass managed to come out on top. But that being said, I guess it's probably for the best, you know, that this ended in a more non-violent solution. But, come on, I still wish there would have been some actual real life, you know, one-on-one, mano-a-mano, grr, I don't know. Glass eventually continued on with his life, and in the film, we're led to believe that after taking his revenge, he might have left to, in a sense, allow himself to die and eventually rejoin his son and his long-lost wife. But of course, this didn't actually happen. Hugh Glass didn't actually die until an entire decade later in 1833. So, I mean, big ups to him for surviving that long and especially for surviving one of the most intense things to have ever happened to a human being. And honestly, I am happy that they made a film about it. And God, I still love watching that bear scene. It's still funny to me, still to this day. I mean, the way he gets bonked around, the way he gets, you know, spanked and slapped around by this bear, it's comical to me. And I'm glad that I now have this, you know, this dramatization of the actual event and the knowledge of what actually happened to this person to, you know now that I can still laugh at that without it being rude. With that being finally said, I want to give my overall opinion and review on this film and just my final thoughts as to what I feel on it and what I think you guys should feel on it as well. Now, the overall production quality and the story and the movie as a whole, I give a solid 9.5 out of 10. I feel like if I give it a 10 out of 10, it's just going to sound made up. It's going to sound favoritism. It's going to sound very, very biased. And to a slight degree, I am a slight bit biased because, well, then again, this whole podcast is on historically based movies. I'm a huge history nerd and I am a huge film nerd as well. So overall, I can definitely appreciate it when two elements are mashed together so well, especially with such breathtaking cinematography. I mean, some of the shots were genuinely jaw-dropping the way they had actually filmed them, and I could watch them literally for days. If I was able to keep them as a screensaver, I absolutely would. Even some of the more destructive shots, like the shots of arrows going over top of their heads, the shots of fires burning all around their camp, horses running around them, you know, arrows and bullets and gunpowder flying everywhere. It overall just added to that element of making me feel like I was there in the film. Like I was there experiencing such danger, and I hope to never experience any kind of danger like that. And I mean, who doesn't love a good revenge story? I mean, somebody coming back from death-defying odds, from, you know, almost impossible odds to come back and give an old knuckle sandwich to the dude who put him in that situation in the beginning. I mean, who doesn't love that in any kind of media that is the center for a lot of different films, a lot of different television, and a lot of, you know, entertainment as a whole? It is a very, very, very good conflict. It's a very, very good motivator, revenge. And, you know, I feel that it was depicted very, very well and done very, very nicely in this film. Now, on a realism aspect, I'll have to rate this movie about a 6 out of 10, I would say. You know, 6 out of 10, that's, I believe, a fairly decent rating, given the fact that one of the biggest plot points to this entire film, Hugh Glass's son being killed, was actually falsified. You know, though it didn't actually happen, very, very well produced. I mean, it was a very believable story. And on top of that, they depicted aspects of this story very accurately to how they actually occurred in real life. So I'll have to give it a solid 6 out of 10 for accuracy rating. Overall, if you haven't gone and seen the film yet, I mean, it's on streaming services. You should watch it. You could watch it at any point. What are you doing if you haven't? But my overall opinion of the film, it is a very beautiful, very gritty, and very well-produced retelling of a story which in itself is grim and oftentimes unimaginable to a lot of different people. That's what I would say my final verdict for this film is, but I would absolutely love to hear any of your guys' comments. If you have any further suggestions on any other movies we should do, or if you're looking just to simply support us or follow us on any social media or anything, remember to look us up at real.echoes on Instagram, and remember to check out our website. And overall, I just want to give you guys a big old thank you for sticking by and for listening to me nerd out for a little bit. I've enjoyed being here with you. I can't wait until the next time, and I will see you guys soon. All right, peace out, everybody. Last but certainly not least, I will leave you with this itty-bitty bit of information to remember. If you remember one thing from this entire show, is if a grizzly bear actually comes at you, just play dead. There's no use in fighting it off. You aren't Hugh Glass. You'll probably get murked pretty easily. But hey, who knows? Just play dead. It's your best option. All right. Thanks, everybody. With all that being done and said, this has been Devin Irizarry for Real Echoes. Thank you all for listening. If you're still looking for more, make sure to check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts every 2 weeks for a new episode. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram for updates and opinions on some of the biggest historical films in Hollywood. And last but not least, have yourselves a nice day.